Buenos días, buenas tardes, y buenas noches. At whatever time you're tuning in to watch our show, welcome to our podcast, Business Matters with Laura Nowlin. First, I want to give a big shout out to Creativa Consulting, Andrea Michelle. She's the person, she's the genius behind the proctor right here. She's behind the camera here. She's the one who actually put this whole podcast together with us. You can reach out to her at 702-296-6242. So if you're thinking about putting together a podcast, make sure you reach out to Andrea Michelle. Also, big shout out to See Us Now Staffing. Remember, See Us Now Staffing is a staffing agency that's here to serve our community, not to be served. Our phone number is 702-902-2448. And today, I would love to welcome our guest, Robert Banghart with Shine a Light Las Vegas. Welcome, Robert. Welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, first I want to ask you is are you originally from Vegas? And if not from Vegas, from where? And what brought you here to Vegas?
I'm not originally from Vegas. I came here in 1999. I was born in a small town in northern New Jersey.
Okay.
I came here to be a chef and get away from some trouble that I was having back home. And I'm a lifelong opioid addict.
Okay.
So, you know, my disease was very progressive, and I'd gotten out of prison back home. And, you know, the pressure was on me. I felt it. And my reasoning in that moment was to come to Vegas and change my life, which is a really great way to do that if you're trying to do the right thing. But in that moment, I wasn't capable of it. But
okay.
I was able to hold together some really nice jobs. Like, I came here, I worked for Wolfgang Puck, I worked for Emeril Lagasse, I worked in the hotels. Like, so I had like these amazing jobs on the surface, but underneath it, I was, you know, dying slowly.
Mm-hmm. Still an addict at that time.
Yeah.
What year, more or less, was it when you came here to Vegas?
1999.
Just
before the millennium.
Got you.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you had a job as a chef.
Yeah.
Right? And so then share a little bit about the story of how you even made it to Shine a Light Las Vegas.
So I told you my disease was progressive, and I had tried to get sober one time, and I had put together a couple years, and then I relapsed, and I was homeless for 5 years. So I was homeless. My homelessness was progressive, just like my disease. And I, you know, at first I was living on Four Master. Then I was, you know, in a camp. And then I lived in a wonderful establishment called the Moulin Rouge. It's an abandoned hotel for the last 60 years, but I lived there for about a year. And then eventually the day came when somebody that I knew on the streets introduced me to the tunnel. And I remember looking at the tunnel and thinking that, like I feel today, going home to my apartment, to my fiancée and our stepdaughter, like, it was home. It was somewhere that I could go.
Yes.
Because my world had gotten so small. You know, that's something we don't think about when you're homeless, that your world becomes very small. You start to remove all these distractions that we have every single day, right? Like the Google Calendar, the emails, the phone calls. Like, I never had to be anywhere on time. I didn't eat three hot meals in a day for 5 years. I didn't shower regularly for 5 years. I didn't shave. Like, every single thing that we take for granted today, I didn't do. My world became very, what's next? That was it. There was no, because hope allows you to plan for the future. I had no hope. So it was very much in the moment.
So I've heard so many stories about people living underground here in Las Vegas. And since I've been in the staffing industry for the last 18 years, typically a lot of people that are trying to get back on their feet will go to a staffing agency because they can't seem to find a job somewhere else. So you do get a large population of that coming to us. And I remember helping out a gentleman who was a veteran, and that's where he lived. And I was like, how? We literally have a whole community underground.
I think what happens is, first and foremost, we're not honest with ourselves, right? Like, and I don't say that to slight anyone. I just want to inspire thought. You know, if we look at the facts, we live in a country where 7 out of 10 Americans live paycheck to paycheck. And that stat was 2 years ago. The economy hasn't gotten any better in the last 2 years, right? And if I asked you if you had health insurance, what would you say?
I would say no.
Car insurance?
Yes.
Do you have unhoused insurance?
Unhoused?
Homeless insurance?
No.
And I ask that question, and I ask it a lot of different people. to try and inspire the thought process, we don't think it's going to happen to us.
Right.
You know, maybe, you know, you could, there's so many different crises that people can experience, right? Did we ever think we were going to be in an abusive relationship? Did I ever think I was going to be food insecure? We never thought we were.
Right.
So we didn't prepare for it, you know, and nobody thinks they're going to be homeless until you are.
You know, so my office right now is in a hub zone. I don't know if you're familiar what a hub zone is.
No.
A hub zone is where the lowest of the population is in that targeted area.
Okay.
So that's where I decided to move my last office to. Closed down all the rest of the offices, and I still have that one there. And that one is on Maryland Parkway and Flamingo. So behind our office is a library. That whole area is a camp.
Yeah.
Literally right now in the wintertime, they have fires, bonfires outside to try to keep warm. And probably about once a month, we'll see the police come by with, you know, a truck or a van or sometimes even a bus to try to relocate and clean up that whole area. But it's a matter sometime of hours once they're done, where then you see little tents go back up. You see people setting back up camp. Sometimes it's the next day, but sometimes it's just hours. I've gotten to my office really early once, and there was literally someone asleep right in front of the door.
Yeah.
And I'm like, do I go over him? What do I do? Literally, I had to walk over him to open up the front door.
Yeah.
There was another time where I got there and they had a fire right by the front door. Mm. It is a safety hazard, but at the same time, how do we address this issue that is not happening just in our community? This is happening throughout the whole United States.
Yeah, everywhere. I think, like all issues, it's a community issue, right? So it has to be a community-wide solution. You know, I think Metro is doing their best, you know, but they've got a ton of other responsibilities, you know? So I think it's, again, I go back to honesty, right? We have to roll our sleeves up as a community and get really honest about the situation and how do we work together. And that really, that's why I am so passionate about Shine, because that's what we are, right? We're all community partners, everybody, and just trying to collectively address an issue and walk through people through the next 18 months of their life so they can rebuild their lives and become successful, right? The caveat with that is that they have to be willing.
Right.
You know, and that's where the outreach comes in. That's where the examples come in. That's where it's just that constant pressure in all levels of the community. But I often think about this. People ask me all the time because of the work that I do. They're like, you know, what do you do when you see a homeless person on the street in your regular life? And I said, my personal thing is, and I'm not telling anybody what to do. My personal thing is that I don't give out money. That's just my thing, you know, once in a blue moon. But what I always make sure that I do is I make sure that they feel seen and heard. They're human beings.
Yes.
They're a part of our community.
Yes.
And I'll take them in the store and get them some food. And, you know, where I live is not too far from Trop Indicator. And there's a gas station that I always go to every single day, and I see the same guy there periodically. And one day I see him out there, and he asked me for some food. I took him inside. I got him some food and all that. And on the way out, he, like, freaked out, started yelling at me, and ran away. And it's okay. Like, I don't know what he's going through. I might be the only person that's been nice to him in a month. You know, I couldn't even imagine that anymore. I'm so removed from it now that, like, it's really hard for me to remember that. But I remember being homeless and thinking, like, I live in the same city as you, but I don't live in the same world as you.
Wow. So what made you change? What helped you?
So for me, I was, the last day that I was homeless, I had, my hustle when I was homeless was dumpster diving. I would go through dumpsters and look for things and trade them and whatnot. And, this day I found a suitcase. It must have been an eviction or something. It had a whole bunch of stuff on it. And I rushed through back to my neighborhood, and the Cubans ran my neighborhood. They controlled all the drugs and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I would always go to them first and like make sure I gave them something because they were always kind of watching out for me. Mm-hmm. And then I went to my tunnel, and then I went. My tunnel was along some train tracks we called the Homeless Highway, and but along those tracks was four businesses that are no longer there. I'm not even sure if they were legitimate. But the fourth business was where I would go and like trade stuff to get, you know, my next fix or get some money. So I went there that day and I dropped it all off because it was a lot. And he told me to come back in an hour. I said, okay. When I came back, there was three other people that I knew that were homeless too waiting for me. They had a hatchet, a knife, and a pipe. And this is like the definition of what it is that I'm an addict, right? Like I it's the disease of no choice. I knew exactly what was going to happen, but on the other side of them was what I needed to get my next one. So I went and they hit me in the head with the hatchet a couple of times, the pipe a couple of times. They stabbed me in the leg. They broke my jaw. They lacerated my liver and they dragged me onto the train tracks and they left me for dead.
Wow.
Well, this is how God showed up, how I first could see God showing up in my life is that the first business, there was an overnight security guard that I had befriended over the years because my mm-hmm. tunnel was right there. I had no idea he was even working that night. He saw it all happen. He called. So an ambulance and police showed up. They dragged me off the train tracks, and I was dead, and they revived me. And when they revived me, the train was coming.
Like oh, there. My gosh.
And I still think I'm fighting for my life. I've got this loud train blowing mm-hmm. by, and mm-hmm. So they hit me with a shot of morphine. I died again, and then I woke up 3 days later on life support. When I woke up in the hospital, there was this nurse yelling, and she was trying to calm me down because I still thought I was fighting for my life.
Right, yeah.
And then I think she hit the morphine button, and then I felt a hand touch my forehead, and I heard the words calm down, and I felt like this overwhelming presence of God in that room.
Praise God.
Yeah.
Praise God.
And while I was in that hospital, our executive director, I had known him in the past, he showed up, and he offered me treatment on a scholarship. Mm-hmm. So once I finally got out of that hospital, because I had, like, you know, all the staples and stitches, my equilibrium was... I went into a treatment center that was only about 13 or 14 guys, mm-hmm. so I was able to kind of take on the world in smaller pieces.
Yes.
Because it took me a long time to really adjust, like, all the injuries and whatnot, and mm-hmm. while I was there, Shine was based out of that treatment center. And at the time, it was four or five volunteers going out every weekend, so I saw it. And then as soon as I got out, I started. So I actually graduated the Shine a Light program, too.
So then right now you actually represent also Shine a Light Las Vegas then?
Yeah.
What role do you take on with the organization?
So as we've grown and because of our so many of our partnerships and the way that we operate, so I'm also the Director of Community Engagement for Crossroads, which is the largest detox and treatment center. Mm-hmm. So we are very close community partners. So I oversee all of specialty courts for Crossroads and for Shine a Light. I see all of data entry and all of community engagement. So all the events that we host, all of our community partners, making sure their relationships are right. I jokingly say I'm a hostage negotiator. I get the call when something's not right and mm-hmm. they need help. So mm-hmm. and it's a beautiful blessing, right? I get to walk people through and I get to mentor a lot of people and help build them up. My team is all people that are like us, you know, came from similar backgrounds that have, you know, mm-hmm. changed their life, and now we get to help open doors for them like the doors were open for me.
Wow. How long then has it been since you've been now part of this organization?
So I started volunteering when I got out of treatment, so I think November was 6 years.
November?
Yeah.
Was 6 years. And so you guys are a 501c3.
Correct.
Right? And so what are the biggest needs that your nonprofit has?
So I think like any nonprofit, money, right? We have a third-party audit, and we run about 90 and 10%. So that means 90% of everything donated to us goes to client programming, 100%.
All right. Yeah,
90%, I apologize.
Yeah, so 10% is what's used for administrative, what you need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're always looking for donors. We have all of our social media accounts have all the links to donate, mm-hmm. and then... supplies, we're always looking for supplies, granola bars, waters, socks, flashlights, batteries. We hand out stuff, and I think it's important to notate that we hand out stuff, but we don't hand out anything that makes it easier to be homeless. And I think that's an important separation to be made. if we're donated, a tent's donated to us, we'll give it out. We're not so rigid with that, but we don't ever ask for tents. We don't ask for, right, it's socks, it's beanies, gloves, it's basic human kindness, right?
Okay.
It's, because what happens is when I walk up to you, and, you know, you're a mile underground in the dark, and you hear me yell and shine a light, and I walk up and I hand you a cigarette and a pair of gloves and a water, the whole mood changes, and mm-hmm. you're a little bit more willing to start talking, right? And everybody's different, just like in everyday life. Sometimes I'm going to have to visit them 30 times before they're willing to talk to me. Sometimes they're going to talk right away. Sometimes they just want a cigarette and they're going to run away, and it's all good, right? We're there to be authentic, to show them that we care, and we go where they're at. It's important, because when I was underground, nobody ever came to my tunnel.
So then you still go back into the tunnels then?
Every Saturday. Six years. A little over 6 years. It's my church.
Mm-hmm. Do you look for volunteers that are willing and wanting to go into the tunnels with you? And if so, what's the process to get vetted?
It's a very simple process. Mm-hmm. We meet at 2330 Highland Drive. That's our office at 7:45 a.m. on every Saturday. And then you just sign a basic waiver. It's very simple, and we take mm-hmm. you out. Every team has a lead, somebody that's experienced in that area.
Yeah.
We have what we call paper routes. So you might do next to your office. That could be your paper route, right? Any tunnels in that area. It's an area you're familiar with, and you've been doing it for a while, so you know our process, and you know what to do. And we have a case manager that's working remotely on Saturdays. So in our group threads, we'll put, hey, we ran into Joe Smith. He's ready for detox, and then they'll direct them where to go. We take them right to detox, get them connected.
Wow. Now what a blessing. What a blessing to have an organization like yours in our city. When someone does say, I want help, right, how often do you see that? Do you see that every time you guys go out? Do you guys see that maybe only once a month?
Oh, no.
We've
grown so much in the past 7 years that on an average Saturday it could be 3 to 5 people.
God, but God.
It's 7 days a week for us, though.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just outreach in the tunnels and washes. It's community partners. It's, you know, now you know us. You might see somebody and you want to call us. Of course, it's all the same to us, right? That's the important piece of our programming is it's iPath, right? It's instant placement with access to treatment and housing. It means that we work with addicts,
mm-hmm.
right? We need to deal with the underlying issues first. We can't put you in a housing first model because 70% of overdoses happen at home alone. So if you look at the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, as a homeless addict, I've given all those up
mm-hmm.
to get high.
Yeah.
So how do we help you deal with these underlying issues, right? So we're going to house you with access to treatment and housing. So you can deal with those underlying issues and connect you with your whatever pathway of recovery it is, and the community and events, and surround you with examples so that way you start to believe it's possible, right? If this guy came from where I came from and he did it, all I got to do is do what he did, and so forth and so on. And that's how it works.
How does someone refer someone to you guys?
We have an outreach line. Yeah.
So it's basically just calling, or do we have to go talk to them and find out if they really want help?
I mean, it's always good to have that basic conversation, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it was just calling because you saw somebody that's homeless, that's all, my phone would be ringing nonstop all
right.
day long, right?
Nonstop.
Yeah, if you reach out to him, hey, I got a buddy, he works at Shine a Light, he'd love to come talk to you. Yeah, I'd love to talk to him. We'll come out for sure.
Really?
Yeah.
And is that the number that we would dial then? Is it the 702?
No,
which number would we dial?
Oh, I have to get out of my phone. I apologize.
Okay, no worries. So there is an outreach
correct
number.
Correct.
We'll definitely put that on the screen for others to be able to see it, because I think that one is key. What advice would you give to anyone that maybe is not used to dealing with people who are homeless, not sure how to approach them? Do you think it's best not to approach because you don't know how? Or, I don't know, what recommendations would you give?
I think it's important to remember that everybody's different.
Mm-hmm.
You approaching, your style is going to be different. I tell my teams all the time, it's be yourselves, because how I do it might be a little bit different for you. Like your mm-hmm. personality needs to come out, but at the end of the day, they're human beings, right?
Right.
And use your common sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they're clearly going through something, maybe it's best not to, or to get two or three people to come with you, right? Mm-hmm. But always eye to eye. If they're sitting down, sit with them. You know what I mean? Ask to approach. Do all those things that we wouldn't typically think about. I tell people all the time, just because it's a cardboard box, that's their home.
Yes.
And you would walk in my front door, mm-hmm. you know, and announce yourself, hey, how you doing? Hand them a water. You know, I have friends. I'd love to come talk to you. And don't force anything. Don't push. Don't be pushy, right? Like, let them come to terms with it. Let them know. Hear the information, but, you know, there's no stipulations. Okay, and walk away. I'm here. And just keep checking on them.
Wow. What resources do you guys have right now for once they're reaching the stages of being able to seek employment? Who are your partners?
Employee Envy. Mm-hmm. And we have a ton of people that reach out to us that, you know, constantly, because they know what we do, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think that's a massive part of our the case management piece, because that's really what we are. That's really what our program is, right? Because our case managers operate within the facilities that are already there. So Shine doesn't own anything. We're just case managers that are walking you through that process at every level to help you have your experience. So if job training is it could be Debbie Isaacs at Unshakables. It could be Employee NV, right? Like, so we've built all these partnerships at all the different levels of care. That way, the honest communication back and forth, right? And they can report back and forth. We can help each other. So I use the analogy of a triangle. Mm-hmm. So at each point, one point's the client, one point's our case manager, and one point's whatever facility they're at, their case manager. Because I went through detox 50 times. 50 times. And then they let me walk out the front door, and they said, okay, go to the shelter, go here. And I went back to what I knew, right? Mm-hmm. So what we do is a warm handoff. So that way there's never that separation. How do I get you from detox to the next level? It's only going to happen in a triangle when you feel supported, when you have a mentor. You're in detox and you're scared and you're nervous and you don't know what's going to happen next. And the facilities, case managers, and our case managers are talking to you. This is what we're going to do next. This is where we're going to take you. And it alleviates the pressure and it makes you feel supported, right?
Right.
And when you're in crisis, that's exactly what you want to feel. Seen, heard, and supported.
I'm just like... I'm, like I said, I'm really glad that there is an organization out there providing this service. What do you guys do when someone, it's not really that they're drug addicts, it's a mental disorder issue?
Well, let's be fair. We know that that is one of the most underserved in mm-hmm. things in our state, in our nation, right? Mental health is a major issue, and we don't have the resources to facilitate what's really happening. But there are options, right? There's Seven Hills, there's Desert Parkway. There are some options. They're just not where they need to be, you know, unfortunately. And when I was homeless, I saw a lot of mental health, and, you know, it's scary.
It is. Are you familiar with any of the statistics? Have you seen that maybe it's gone up, it's gone down? Are you familiar at all with any of the numbers?
I've yet to see numbers go down in anything to do with homelessness since I've been doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So
every year you've been seeing it actually increase, even with you guys out there helping.
Yeah. In the totality, right? Mm-hmm. In the totality.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot had to do with, you know, 2008, the economy crash, we've had COVID, we have everyone trying to bounce back from COVID. 2024 was one of my worst years ever, I can tell you, as a small business out there. So I'm really looking for 2025. So I'm hoping that we can get back on track and the economy takes a turn. In closing, what would you like to tell our audience?
I would say to check us out and get involved. You know, we're a community project. We utilize the community to help mm-hmm. the community. And everybody that comes with us that gets involved is all levels of the community. You know, I could be out there tomorrow with a judge, with a PO, with a, you know, a Chase Bank. And somebody that just came out of the tunnel 2 weeks ago. And this is Las Vegas trying to make Las Vegas better.
No, thank you. Thank you, Robert, for coming on and sharing your story, your personal story, and the organization.
Thanks
so if you would like to, yeah, absolutely. If you would like to help, you can reach out to 702-890-6431. Our show airs every Friday at 3 p.m. A new podcast goes out. So once again, thank you so much to Creativa Consulting, Andrea Michelle, one of our sponsors at 702-296-6242. Till the next time. Thank you.